So I have no disclosures. Might as well get that out of the way. So I appreciate the opportunity to share with you a little bit of some of the research that I've done. There's a lot of gaps that we have to fill, and I'm only going to be able to give you a little taste of that today, so hopefully this will help encourage many of you to help with the cause. So if we think about older adults in the U.S., vision impairment is a big part of that. We have chronic disease affecting more than 90 million people's quality of life. We have an estimated annual cost of $51 billion a year for eye conditions and diseases that result in chronic vision impairment. And we're seeing that this is something that's becoming increasingly prevalent in all racial and ethnic groups, especially when we're looking at 75 years and older. So if we think of chronic vision loss as a chronic condition and disease, which the CDC and others are finally recognizing up there with the other big ones, which is thrilling, we're seeing this affecting 1 in 28 adults of people who are over 40. We have vision impairment associated with more chronic conditions, with falls, with more doctor visits, with more medication, poor overall health status. So we're starting to build a very strong foundational base of evidence with regards to what vision impairment entails and what is associated and how it affects individuals with vision impairment. So we already have had some good suggestions and comments about how it's growing. We saw the 2050 projections from our other esteemed panelists. The key that I think is really important is a quadrupling of folks with diabetic retinopathy from 2.5 to almost 10 million. That's going to be that's just a big, big area. So just want to throw that out there. So vision rehabilitation, and there's no consensus on what low vision is. We have lived with this for years, and we will probably continue to live with it. But chronic vision impairment is becoming terminology that's more and more commonly seen in the literature and used in policy language. So vision rehabilitation is recognized in the U.S. healthcare system as the process by which we evaluate, treat, and manage chronic vision loss. It's provided mostly by optometrists and some ophthalmologists, and I'll show you some numbers on that in a bit. However, there's no consensus on the best model. Not everything is paid for, although the vast majority of clinical care is covered and continues to have additional advocacy. I think a real key for the process of vision rehab is really that we can be a conduit, those of us that work in treating vision impairment, a conduit to such things as healthy people objectives, helping to increase coordination of care, interdisciplinary approaches to chronic conditions, reducing disparities related to vision loss, and helping to identify the elusive pathway on how we reduce VI-related disability, which we really don't have a handle on at this point. So I'll share with you a little bit of access to care. There's potential access and realized access, and I'm just going to share with you a little bit of this bigger picture. Potential access is do people have an opportunity to get to the care? And then realized access is, are they utilizing the care? Are people actually getting uptake? And there's gaps in how we measure access. There's gaps in how we look at utilization and how factors are related. So the general consensus on the front end of this is we need to build additional methodologies that help to quantify factors and relationships related to access to care. So this is in a conceptual model that has kind of formed the foundation for my work. And if we're looking at the upstream factors with regards to what impacts individuals' ability to access care, the key part is, can we get them into the system? Can we get entree into vision rehabilitation system for individuals? And there is a further front-end part long before they get to us in the chair, which is what affects their ability to even have the facilities, the funding, and individual characteristics that might predispose people. So this is really forming the basis of what we're looking at. So for this particular work, I used two cohort studies. One was using the BRFSS, Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System data from the CDC, and we used this for 6 years. I looked at individuals identified as having vision loss. We ended up with a weighted sample of over 11 million, and then I did a first, we think it's the first, national validated census of clinicians involved in vision rehabilitation care, and this was a little unwieldy because we have a lot of factors to look at. So not only did I compile this from national professional groups. I also looked at state-level affiliated sources that can validate who is doing what. So Department of Rehab Services will have validated lists of those eye care providers that are authorized or identified as providing care. So this is a very conservative estimate, but yet it's the best that we have, and it's, again, I think fairly conservative because we have a lot of docs out there that may not identify themselves as assisting with vision impairment within their practices. But I think this is a pretty good place for us to work with. So some of the variables that we looked at were, from a patient perspective, were gender and age and some of our other demographics. We had sample characteristics of these groups. We looked at some descriptive and exploratory analysis, and I won't go into the logistic regression, but what we found, this is an example of some of the data that we found with regards to reporting access to care. And to give you the quick overview, since we're limited on time, we found that age, education, and income were variables that were associated with all potential and realized access variables. So we now have some collaboration with other areas of healthcare showing that these are important. Gender, race, carries through with potential and realized access, both from general medical care, which we broke out from access to eye care. So besides finding some supporting evidence for this framework for how we want to look at providing care, we also looked at the importance of access for adults with chronic conditions using the models of patients with vision loss, needing to include the investigation of geographical factors. And so the next part I want to share with you is that we tried to take a look at the state level on what was going on with regards to access from a potential standpoint. Are there care providers available? What are some of those variables? So we defined a vision rehab clinician variable to include optometrists or ophthalmologists. We looked at how to measure this and developed a new access variable, which I called vision rehab access, very, very intuitive on that one. And this was a novel access to care that we calculated based on adults with chronic vision loss and providers in an area, and then we looked at several different iterations of that. So I'll get to the good part here. Let me share with you that one of the still remaining questions is that we really don't know if access is problematic. We don't know if there's a lack of care providers that are working with folks with vision loss. People argue both sides of the coin on that. So we really wanted to try and come up with a way to springboard into answering some of these questions. So we used the patient census information from VRFIS. We looked at the access variable under different assumptions and the state ratios. I won't go into all that because of time, but I want to share with you one visual, and this is an example of a national picture of who is where. The darker the green in the state means the higher number of care providers within that area. So you can see that we have a high census number in California, in the East Coast, Michigan, Texas, but we have a real lack, especially right in that western Midwest area of the country. We also have some smaller numbers in the South. And this is all coming out, so the actual specific numbers hopefully we can get to. When you break it down by profession, it's very much what we anecdotally knew, that we have out of the almost 1,000 care providers, 955 are optometry and 55 are ophthalmology. So because this is vision rehabilitation care, what used to be low vision became low vision rehab, is a formal part of training in the optometric profession, it would be expected that the vast majority of care providers would be optometrists. The nice thing is that this is starting to change. ACGME and ophthalmology and medicine is starting to recognize the importance of this. However, this is still not a formal didactic or clinical part of training in ophthalmology. So that is just something that's intuitive. We just can now show what the numbers are. Now, because of the limited data on individuals through the BRFIS, we could only look at access, at creating this new access measure in 18 states. And I throw out the colors here. The darker the color, that means, excuse me, the the better access has a lower value, and then the worse access has a higher value. So the light colors in this particular map indicate, and this is just a one representation, that there is a lower ratio of patients to providers. So that means you will probably have better potential access to finding somebody in a state that's light than you would in a state that has a darker color. And the range is quite large. It can go anywhere from a ratio of about 2,500 to 1 up to about 35,000 to 1. And this happens to just be a short summary of what we found. And we're looking at Iowa as having the highest, or the best, I guess, if we want to use that term, the best access to vision rehabilitation care. They rank number one with an access of 2,834 patients per clinician, and the worst was Arkansas at 48,000. And you'll see that we do see some trends where, again, the South has some consistency with regards to worse access for individuals. We also looked at access under varying assumptions based on who the clinician provider group was, if it was based on a census prevalence figure or whether it was based on a BRFIS prevalence figure. And this highlights some of the problems we have with our big data, national data, secondary data analyses. We do still see discrepancies, and we've had some great discussion about why we have problems in just having different types of surveys and studies identifying who has vision loss. So vision impairment, if you have severe vision impairment, in a diagnostic world, that's the same thing as being legally or statutorily blind, but that's not necessarily how it's interpreted with different types of, that's just one example of how surveys are done. So just a quick overview of these findings. We had Iowa, New York, Tennessee, Wyoming, and Ohio at the top of the list with good access. At the bottom was Arkansas, West Virginia, Alabama, and Louisiana, which is kind of sad knowing that they're all clustered in that area. Limitation is we really were only looking at 18 states because of our data limitations. So the interesting thing, and this is where we're now looking to do additional work, is that relative access levels varies in state by prevalence. So depending on who you talk to and what data you use, you'll find different values. So the access was, VR access was number 17 out of 18 for the state with the lowest per capita income. It was also 7th and 2nd for the two highest. So we see trends in income and some of our other variables, as we mentioned earlier. And I just want to share with you some of how we feel this will help to implement some of our policy and work moving forward. It gives us some new insights into the importance of geographical access and provider density, so it ties into where you live matters. We're starting to be able to look at our folks and really be good advocates for them with regards to geography. And although the census would off the top look low, it's really unknown if a shortage exists or what constitutes appropriate access at this point. So some of our future steps will include trying to identify what is appropriate access to care, not just not just uptake, but also just actually having potential work. And as I said, we have the limitations on the fact that we only have a few states, and we actually are comfortable that we have underestimated the actual provider numbers. However, this is something that I think can help us in aggregating better data. For example, in Arizona, we have state workforce registry data that only includes physicians, pharmacists, and nurses. We don't have any workforce data that even recognizes optometry, let alone what they may focus on, or ophthalmology if they have a particular area of specialty. We have very, very, very long way to go with regards to helping to identify folks. So I think that all of our work wants to help support policies and programs that can help. And one of the ways that we feel we can help to move forward is help to mitigate factors that limit potential access, whether it's financial, whether it's CMS coverage, whether it's advocating for that piece that insurance does not cover at this time. We can say 80% is covered, 20% isn't. That's just an estimate. But we also can help to support focus on chronic care and on the management of chronic conditions by looking and utilizing and investigating our patient population that acquires some type of chronic vision impairment. So I want to thank part of this work was funded by National Eye Institute and the National Institutes of Health. So thank you very much.